This is Mark Strassman, reporter with Utopia Media's Broadband Wireless Access World. We're about to speak to Diana Neff, who's the CIO of Philadelphia. Welcome back to Utopia Media's Broadband Wireless Access World.
Hi, Mark. Good to be with you.
You've had a pretty busy day today announcing Mayor Street's plan for Wi-Fi Philadelphia. Could you give us the gist of what was announced today?
Certainly. Mayor Street, at noon today, announced that he was accepting the Wireless Executive Committee's business plan that had been presented to him, and that he was also announcing the creation of the Wireless Philadelphia nonprofit corporation that will run and manage the operations, and the release of the request for proposal to build the network.
Okay, let's focus on that nonprofit organization. What's it going to be called? What's its relation to the city going to be? What's it going to do?
Sure. The nonprofit corporation is, as it says, a 501c3 nonprofit, which was incorporated by Mayor Street on March 30th, 2005. I am currently one of the board members as an ex officio, and the mayor will be appointing four board members for staggered terms, and then the five of us will elect four additional board members. So the board will be comprised of nine members.
And what's its charge going to be? What's its responsibility and authority going to be?
Again, its missions and goals is to spur economic development in Philadelphia and to work to overcome the digital divide, enhance community neighborhoods, and help reduce the cost of government service delivery. It will maintain the contracts. The corporation or the nonprofit corporation will use a cooperative wholesale business model that will contract with the private sector to actually build the network, and then it will use separate contracts through a cooperative wholesale model, work with internet service providers or institutional service providers in the delivery of that service to the end user.
Okay, now how extensive is that network going to be in terms of capacity and breadth of scale and so on?
The network will cover the full 135 square miles in Philadelphia. At the base, it will have a minimum capability of providing 1 megabit upstream and downstream symmetrical access. It will provide multiple tiers of service from residential, both nomadic and fixed, to small business nomadic and fixed, secured government, secured business, which will allow for point-to-multipoint T1-type connections to the Internet, and then with the predominant group being residential and then the small businesses.
Okay, now does this mean that the Wi-Fi is going to be available at any and every point within the city of Philadelphia through this network?
That's correct. It is an indoor and outdoor network. Our goal is not large corporations or multi-story buildings. It's geared at residential and a small business for government use for remote and nomadic and the potential for replacing leased T1 lines.
Okay, and what kind of density do you expect will be necessary for the Wi-Fi radios to provide this level of coverage?
We anticipate that if the technology that is selected is Wi-Fi mesh with a WiMAX or pre-WiMAX backhaul back end, that we would have about 3,000 devices mounted on the light poles around the city.
That's 3,000 for the whole city?
Correct.
3,000 Wi-Fi radios backhauled by a WiMAX network?
Correct. And for about 60% of our backhaul connections,
right.
The other 40 will come from a wired connection.
Right.
And that's about 18 devices per square mile.
Okay. And you're saying this is going to provide 1 megabit down and up for any laptop with a card in it anywhere in the city?
Yes, as a minimum. And that it could provide a bigger or larger, I don't know if it's bigger or larger, but it's more capacity, more throughput. We're experiencing in our pilot areas today with lower subscribership of about 3 to 4 megabits speed performance.
Okay. Now, how much is it going to cost, generally, do you estimate, to produce this network?
We've evaluated with three different looks and options at the infrastructure, and it appears to be about $10 million to build the infrastructure.
For the whole city again.
Right. And then the nonprofit will finance about $15 million to give them 2 years of startup cost and covering expenses.
And where are they going to get that $15 million?
That will come through commercial bank loans or through taxable bonds.
Okay, and how long do they expect it'll take for them to pay that money back?
About 4 years. We should have the debt paid back within 4 years, as well as generating enough cash flow to cover a working capital reserve of about $5 million, and then or $4 million, and then $5 million for what we call free cash flow, in above covering all of the operating expenses and the debt repayment of about $5 million over that 4 years.
Okay, and then,
5 years.
Then after that 4 or 5 year payback period, the network will be installed. Will that mean that costs will be become lower and rates to users will become lower as well?
Again, we're using the cooperative wholesale model, so we will use wholesale rates to help the service providers deliver that cost and see the costs come down.
Okay, now who are those service providers going to be? Are they going to be just somebody in a neighborhood who wants to do this? Is it going to be big national corporations? So, how many and in what way will this nonprofit make arrangements with ISPs to provide the actual service?
It'll be a contractual agreement for a wholesale rate per subscriber, and the nonprofit will negotiate those agreements with service providers like Earthlink, AOLs, MSN, and also our local WISP or wireless internet service providers, such as Closed Networks, that does business wirelessly in Philadelphia. We'll also be working with institutions. For example, Drexel University is a wireless university on campus. They have 14,000 internet students and faculty. They're interested in talking about being a institutional service provider, so that because they already do the administration, the setup, and the control, that they could offer their students and faculty wireless access for either an additional fee or build it into their tuition rates or however they work that.
Okay, so do you imagine this will be a more of a patchwork arrangement or a sort of comprehensive one? Would AOL or MSN or Earthlink sort of a contract to cover the whole city or part of it, or do you have an emphasis on providing some of this opportunity to local companies or even neighborhood groups that might want to set themselves up this way?
Right. It'll be one contiguous network.
Right.
Using one technology platform.
Right.
But we'll use competition and make it open so it's an inclusive network. It won't be closed to people that meet the requirements for the security and performance and on the network. But say you're a company that has a WizBang application.
Right.
And you want to reach out to the subscribers on Wireless Philadelphia. You would be able to promote your product out to that community. It would be an additional cost in and above the connection to the network, but you would be able to deliver services over that.
So does that mean that, let's say I live on some residential street there in Philadelphia, would I be able to get my wireless service from MSN or AOL or Earthlink or a neighborhood consortium of people that we set up, all four of those places?
Yes, or any one of those. It's a matter of choice. And by having multiple ISPs, you have the competition to help keep the rates as low as possible as well.
So presumably raise the level of service. I've just read today that MSN is launching MSN 7 that provides a whole lot of video and audio communications capability. Presumably then MSN can say, we'll offer all these add-ons and we'll charge you X amount per month, and Earthlink will have to match it or so on. And so you're hoping to get the benefits of both the nonprofit and a competitive free market market situation.
Absolutely.
Is this going to cost the city of Philadelphia and the taxpayers of Philadelphia anything?
No. Again, the city has created the nonprofit, which will get the financing from non-city dollars. However, the city will actually benefit from that because we will be able to be the institutional provider for the government departments at the wholesale rate, which we estimate will reduce our telecommunication costs for field operation and remote facility connections by about in half.
So you're going to be a WISP for your own internal needs?
Correct.
Okay. Let's talk about how this is going to be built. Again, the same kind of question I had about whether it's going to be comprehensive or distributed. The nonprofit will be putting out an RFP. It's putting it out now. We're going to have a link to it on the site. Are they going to look for one company to do the whole city, or are they going to look for a national company? Are they going to look for local suppliers? How do you envision that working?
We believe that it will be consortiums of companies that will come together to make a proposal on the network. It doesn't have to be. You know, what we're looking for is the respondents to be able to meet the criteria that's been identified in the request for proposal. And from that, we'll evaluate the technology that's being proposed, their commitment to research and development, security. So there's a whole plethora of evaluation criteria that we will look at it. So we're not so concerned if whether it's one company or it's multiple companies coming together under one prime.
So what you're saying is,
on this proposal.
What you're saying is then you're going to give the contract to one prime contractor to do the whole city.
Right.
And
do the infrastructure piece.
To do the infrastructure piece. So, and you're expecting that some of those prime contractors will be consortia of local or national companies or any
right.
kind
and
of mix of
it. Right, and they might be, you know, obviously Wi-Fi equipment companies with network companies
right.
with integrators that do the support and maintenance. They are the tier two. There'll be, you know, they'll have to guarantee 24/7 coverage with 99 to 999 uptimes, you know, those are the things that we're looking at.
So they
can provide
right. So you imagine then that most of the players in the United States who are involved in this will aggregate themselves into a smaller number of consortia that will. Among each of them will be able to provide a complete package, and that those prime contractors / consortia will be bidding to get the business.
Correct. And based on the 1 square mile neighborhood pilots that we have done, that's exactly what has happened, that we've seen groups of companies come together, and we think that those groups of companies will submit a response to our request for proposal.
Okay, what's the timetable from here on out?
Obviously, the RFP was issued today. The responses are due back the last week in May.
Okay, about 2 months then.
Mm-hmm. And then 6 weeks to 2 months. It's in that time frame.
Right.
Then we'll take about a month and a half to evaluate those technical responses.
And that when you say we, that's the board of the nonprofit is the group that's going to make that decision.
Right, in conjunction with technical experts.
Right.
For example, the University of Pennsylvania School of Engineering will be providing some technical experts to work with us on the evaluation team.
Right.
And again, the nonprofit is the we, and then we're working. Drexel's going to provide some technical expertise. We'll look for non-vendor specific expertise. Intel is continued to be a big supporter, and will provide resources in the technical area as well. So we think we'll have a good group of companies that are organizations that will help the nonprofit sort through. Provide the level of expertise that's needed to evaluate a major project like this.
Okay, and then at what point will that a nonprofit make its decision on who gets the contract?
Probably around the 1st of July.
Okay.
And then we'll do contract negotiations and start the build in late August.
Okay.
2005.
Is that a good time of the year construction-wise to do this?
Absolutely. You know, the earlier the better.
Okay.
You like to have those good summer months and fall months before you get into winter.
And how soon will it be until the whole system is deployed, and will you be opening up parts of it as they're deployed, as they're built out?
We expect, and based on, you know, our look at the technology, how our pilots have gone, that we'll be able to cover the entire city within a year. So by the end of summer 2006, the entire city would be covered. And yes, we will bring up neighborhoods as we deploy the technology. That's the beauty of this technology, is you can go live in those neighborhoods once you have that connection set up out to the internet.
Okay, what kind of overall strategy do you have for an upgrade path as more, better, faster, cheaper technology becomes available? What's the overall approach that you're going to use to upgrade in that way?
We recognized early on that it was going to be very important, this is a new technology, that there be an upgrade path. Part of the criterion which will evaluate the proposals will be what's the commitments from the companies, where do they see, obviously I think it's almost a billion devices that are out there today are based on the 802.11b. So we'll need to make sure that if they go to a G, and we expect the proposals to be BG, that they're backwards compatible. Obviously with pre-WiMAX, if they're using that as a part of their proposal, the standards won't be set until the end of the year, next spring. So we'll need to have a commitment. So we will build that into the contract. We will use that as part of the criteria as our selection for that company or consortia of companies. To make our selection.
Okay. What about the sort of Wi-Fi on steroids, 802.11n, also known as MIMO, multiple input, multiple output? Is mm-hmm. that going to figure into this at all?
It will in the outer years. We don't expect to see that really for a couple of years at a minimum. There's P out there, and there's a whole lot of alphabet soups, and then you'll have the 802.16 in the WiMAX and all of its alphabet varieties. So again, that's important to us to go with that group of consortia that are committed to this. Also, you know, having industry experts like Intel who are kind of leading the way with the chips and what they support will help us in that evaluation.
Okay, let's go a little bit into the politics away from the technology for a minute. What kind of responses have you been getting from local political forces, groups, individuals, personalities? How is this going down there in Philadelphia?
Interestingly, in the community itself, there is strong support for this. We have had good contacts with the national carriers and ISPs that are supportive of this. Our minority and business chambers are supportive of this. The real outside naysayers have come mostly from outside the organization and or outside of even the city. There is a good groundswell of support. Every program will have its naysayers. It wasn't unexpected, and we'll continue, to address issues if they're valid concerns, take a look at that. We think we put a solid program together. Our nonprofits, our neighborhood groups, our schools are all very excited, are participating with us in this program. So from a grassroots level, we've got great support.
Administratively and legislatively, is this a done deal? Does the mayor sign a document and all this happens?
Yes. You know, for the city to be then a user on the network, we will take that contract back to council for approval, as we do with contracts.
But the mayor has
the authority to create the nonprofit,
right,
to accept the business plan, to allow us to move forward.
Okay. Now, a few months ago, Verizon went to Harrisburg and said you shouldn't be able to do this. What's the nature of the laws that passed and the agreements that you have on the side with Verizon that will allow you to proceed? And is there any chance that there are some loopholes you didn't see that's going to mean some kind of legal challenges to one or more legal challenges to what you're trying to do?
No, for Philadelphia, as a part of, you know, our negotiations, and because of the strong grassroots support, we were able to work with Verizon with the help of the governor to get a waiver. And as a part of that waiver, you know, our city law department negotiated a non-litigation clause.
Okay.
So Wireless Philadelphia is clear to move forward without threat of litigation. And the creation of the nonprofit and acting as a nonprofit entity
okay.
to build the network.
Okay, I don't want to go too far afield, but I'm wondering what House Bill 30 had to say about other parts of Pennsylvania and whether you might serve either as just a model or maybe get more actively involved in helping other municipalities within Pennsylvania or for that matter anywhere in the country or the world to follow in your footsteps, which of course you haven't really begun putting in the sand yet,
but we think we have a little bit, one or two steps. In that, you know, we have done all of the research. We've made our business model accessible up on our website at www.phila.gov/wireless. The RFP is up there. The launch press materials are up there. So we're sharing with other communities, whether they're local communities, because I think it's important to remember there is a grandfather clause within the Pennsylvania legislature that allows communities to get involved in wireless as long as they're up for a fee, that are up and running by January 1st, 2006.
So that means that the city of Pittsburgh or Harrisburg or any other part of the state could essentially take your document and word process Philadelphia out and put in Harrisburg and start doing this themselves now if they wanted to.
Well, I certainly don't promote that. You need to know and you need to do a stakeholder analysis.
Right.
You need to make sure that you've got executive support. You need to do a lot of a technical analysis about your topography, what's the density, will this work? Our business model may not be the right model for everyone.
Okay.
But because we've done a lot of research on what the different models are, people can look at that and then take information and help it make it work. So we've shortened that timeline
right.
For other communities to be able to build on what we've done. It is never a good idea just to take somebody else's blueprint and lay it over yours, because the needs will be different.
But in fact, the background research, as you said, that you've done, and the elucidation of the different models and so on, could save other municipalities some of the time that way.
Absolutely.
as they fit it to their own situation.
Absolutely.
Okay. Let's say again, I'm a residential person there in Philadelphia, and I either have DSL or cable, and I'm looking at this with a lot of excitement and anticipation. What would you estimate the cost for these kind of connections that you have been talking about going to be on the ground for residential customers in Philadelphia as the plan rolls out and once it's in place?
Well, we believe the service offering at the residential level will be sub $20.
Okay.
So that's kind of the market area. We'll also be working as we sign up internet service providers to have a very low cost for our very low income,
right.
our disadvantaged residents.
How low would that be? Would it go to zero? And what's the structure of how that's going to be financed exactly? Is there going to be like a means test? Are there going to be like wireless stamps? What's the procedure going to be to establish that?
The establishment will be based on federal guidelines. So if families can show proof of that they qualify for a federal program, they can approach their ISP and ask for the very low income rate. So it's not set on a dollar basis.
Right. Well, Will the ISPs be subsidized in some way, or will they be bearing the cost of providing the below market rate cost?
We are asking the ISPs, you know, based on the low wholesale rate,
right,
to bear that cost.
So it's essentially then, is that going to make it less likely? But what you've said, that there'll be one construction company to build everything, and there'll be multiple ISPs available in different places. Are you worried that this will mean that underserved areas will remain underserved because the ISPs serving them, as you've just said, will need to bear the cost of subsidizing those people who qualify under federal programs for other assistance and therefore become qualified for assistance in the wireless area?
No, we think because this is a nonprofit organization that is focused on those social programs and good, that we will work with those neighborhoods. And it's also an option for a nonprofit group that is in a community area to be an institutional provider. So if we don't see the ISPs, however, you know, we will require as we sign up the ISPs that they have this very low income offering.
Okay.
Capability, but we will work with the community groups in the neighborhoods to make sure that there is an ISP, and it's always the nonprofit's option to be an ISP if we find that there are you know, red line neighborhoods that
right,
nobody wants to come in and provide. But because there's an economic incentive to be able to do this across the city, and they're not locked into a neighborhood or area, that will be an attractive draw, and that they will understand the commitment of what Wireless Philadelphia is about to our underserved neighborhoods to provide this offering.
Okay. Now, the wireless network is essentially one half of what's necessary, or maybe a third of what's necessary to remove the digital divide. The other, of course, are the devices themselves. What do you have within this plan that's going to be used to provide underserved communities and individuals within those communities, or scattered underserved individuals, with the devices that they're going to need to connect to the network in order to take advantage of it?
Well, one of the reasons that we selected the nonprofit to be the model to govern and run the operation is that they can do grants and foundation solicitations to get income coming in to do those very things, to help get computers, setting up the refurbish and recycle programs to get computers into the homes of people that can't afford that, and to provide the training and the education. The nonprofit will work with the community nonprofit groups, you know, help fund that training so that they can provide the training. So if you were to qualify to get a free computer, you would have to come to 8 to 10 hours of training,
right,
to receive that at no cost.
So in essence, what you're saying then is that other nonprofits will be able to say to their potential contributors, look, we've got low or almost no cost internet access now for the whole city. If you give us money to buy new or refurbished computers, that's going to be leveraged most effectively now, because along with the computers that you're going to help us pay for, the city, the nonprofit has provided the network connection so that it'll be put to immediate and useful connection with those people.
Yes, we look to leverage what we're doing. I mean, the goal of the nonprofit is also to raise funds to be able to place 10,000 free computers throughout the city, and we believe with the school district's efforts and their recycling program, with the nonprofits and their efforts in recycling programs, that we'll leverage off of that. And, you know, the school district in 2 years has placed about 3,000 computers.
Do they put it in the schools or in homes, or how does that happen?
It's a combination. They are working, you know, they wanted to make sure that all of the teachers in the classrooms had the computers they needed, but they also have been working to get computers into the homes.
Okay. Okay, now as we're talking about leveraging things within the building of the platform, say something about how you want to leverage this network once it's in place, or as it goes into place, in particular areas. You mentioned that the city expects to save 50% of some of its expenses by using this wireless network.
Correct. Today, the government itself, for our field crews for slow speed access, pay commercial carriers, cellular carriers.
Right.
You know, in certain area costs, it's as much as $80 per user per month.
Right.
We believe as being a institutional subscriber on Wireless Philadelphia, we'll be able to reduce that by more than 50%. We have some 300 remote facilities that we pay for leased telecommunication lines today. Again, we'll be able to reduce those costs by about 50%.
And so those are those savings going to surface as help the city meet its budget, or will some of that money be going into some of these other programs that you've talked about, or both?
Both. It reduces what we're paying today and anticipate for additional wireless use in the field, that they will reduce the city's actual telecommunications costs.
Right.
While we're paying, you know, that other 50% to the nonprofit,
right,
as an institutional subscriber,
right,
via the wholesale rate, which then allows them to accomplish their goals as well.
So you're doing a lot of things at once.
Right.
All right, talk about education from pre-kindergarten to graduate level. What kind of impact do you expect this will have on public and private education in Philadelphia?
Well, we think it'll have a huge impact. As I had mentioned, the school district has had this campaign to unwire their classrooms and have wireless on campuses.
Right.
Philadelphia is a large school district. We have about 270 schools. 200 of those schools will be wireless in June of this year. They have been working to create the academic applications to reach out to the children and the families and the parents in the home. And they are partnering with us. They select, in our pilot areas, they select a school and about 30 families that receive free computers. And we test out the applications that have been developed by the school district for use, whether they're tutorials or they're things like parents being able to check homework assignments, communications with teachers and administrators. So there's this whole wonderful synergy going on between the K-12 and the nonprofit organization in the use of Wireless Philadelphia.
Okay, what do you expect this will do for Philadelphia's competitive advantage as a place to locate businesses, including especially the amenities, this Wi-Fi amenity for residents who would relocate to Philadelphia if their businesses moved here as well?
Right. Well, we have worked closely with our marketing and tourism groups, and wireless access for business travelers is an almost must these days. So this will definitely enhance our image in our neighborhoods where we were doing redevelopment zones. We already have some wonderful examples where individual private investors that are looking, one that I can share with you, where they refurbished a manufacturing building that had been vacant for 18 years, and they're creating artist loft studios. And 5 out of the 12 clients that would look to rent those studio space, their requirements was for wireless access, and that they can use it both outdoors as well as indoors was very important. So he would work with a institutional subscriber or a commercial subscriber to provide wireless inside the building, and then their clients have access to wireless outside. He said it wasn't the only reason, that he selected to refurbish this building, but it certainly was enticing to know that it was available. It happens to be in one of our pilot areas, so they're in on the ground floor early in the game, so they're very excited about it. So we think there's a lot of potential in that area to stimulate economic development. We worked with Innovations Philadelphia and eConsult, a economic consulting company, to look at what the potential was for economic impact. Through the studies and analysis that they did, they estimate that we could create as many as 3,000 new jobs. in Philadelphia by having this ubiquitous wireless access.
What about political implications? Government e-services, how are you hoping to use this network to facilitate citizen government interaction?
Well, again, as a greater percentage of your populace have connection to the internet, they don't have to drive downtown and transact business with the city. They'll be able to use the services that are provided through the city's website. They can, you know, pay bills. They can get permits. They can find out information without having to drive, park, you know, worry about children and be able to transact their business. It's a greater opportunity to share information about what's going on in Philadelphia. So there's a whole lot of pluses, and you know, having a more educated populace that can communicate using a lower cost medium.
There was a organization named Civitium that was involved in your process. Who are they, and what role do they have? They played? Will they play?
Civitium is a business that focuses on helping municipalities do their strategic planning, their business planning, and they also have technical resources. So I worked with Civitium, worked with the Wireless Executive Committee to gather the information and put together our business plan. They did the radio frequency analysis for the city, and just been an outstanding vendor. And they're vendor neutral because they don't sell any end product.
Right.
And they're very familiar with all of the different companies, got great contacts, helped us, you know, meet with the different companies, explain to them what we were doing in Philadelphia, get their support for supporting some of our pilot areas. So they've been an outstanding vendor to work with.
I did an interview earlier today with a company called InTouch Health in Santa Barbara, California. They make something called the RP6, remote presence robot that allows doctors from their homes or their offices to go from hospital to hospital and interact with patients through a video conferencing system. And it works on Wi-Fi within the hospital. What do you see as a potential for applications like that, or more generally for telemedicine, or the wider distribution of health services in Philadelphia, and in fact even for emergency medical teams as they're returning to hospitals with victims of accidents or health incidents, to be able to communicate with the hospital while they're in transit in their emergency vehicles?
And that's one of the beauties of this technology, is that it is nomadic and portable. You can keep a signal as you go from cell to cell. So it's very exciting for us. One of our strong focus groups was in this health care services arena, everything from surgeons, cardiac surgeons that have patients that they need to monitor remotely. And as the more of the populace has this connection, it makes telemedicine a reality. We've been talking about it for years, but you really haven't had the in-home broadband performance that you need to be able to monitor whether it's heart or it's diabetes or you know, a variety. The city has 9 health clinics, and we see this as a wonderful opportunity for disease control and being able to reach out and you know, to know if you have a poison victim, that you can get online, get the information, talk to the people that you need to, and have the availability to even see what's going on, you know, if that capability was in the home. But it's not just for the well-to-do, it's for everybody.
So that means, for example, either with a video camera or more sophisticated monitoring devices, patients who need that kind of attention can be hooked up to hospitals or their doctor's offices in ways that would allow for desired surveillance and a consultation on an immediate and very cost-effective basis, wouldn't it?
Yes, absolutely.
What about public safety, and specifically whether the system might be used to set up a network of surveillance cameras that would be available either to the public safety forces or to everyone, and what kind of thinking or discussion has there been about whether that's Big Brother or whether that's very helpful, or what's the potential and the possibilities in that area?
Well, we do think there's a lot of potential for that, and that, you know, today if you're setting up surveillance cameras in a remote facility, it can cost up to $100,000 to have one camera,
right?
Because you got to run a wired line to that, you know. And if you have a large park system like the city of Philadelphia does in our Fairmont Park, and there's some 1,800 acres, it provides a wonderful opportunity to enhance that capability. It also makes the network available for companies that can do the more intelligent monitoring to be able to sell that service and have the infrastructure in place to allow it to occur. We were talking with one gentleman that has a surveillance that can actually recognize features in crowds. So if you know you're having a highly controversial and there's the terrorism threats and so forth, those, you know, mug shots can be programmed in, and the intelligence of the camera can search the crowds and be able to do that, you know. And that's a little Big Brother,
right?
But it, you know, in certain situations that may be warranted. We are providing that service, but the infrastructure is there and will have the capacity to allow that to happen. So as that need is there, or as companies, say you're a sole proprietor and you want to be able to have cameras in three shops because you can only be in one place at one time.
Right. So essentially,
you have the option to be able to do that.
Okay. So essentially, where people or organizations have jurisdiction, they're going to be allowed to use this system. As for public space, has there been much discussion about that? About whether every street lamp that has a Wi-Fi radio on it will also have a camera that will either be passive or, in fact, could be operated from some center or other to do that? Because potentially it's a two-edged sword. It has the potential to monitor everyone's every movement, and on the other hand, it has a possibility of cutting down crime. What kind of discussions have been had there about this?
Well, we do
so far?
Have examples of how a Wi-Fi network can provide benefits for crime surveillance. Louisiana and New Orleans, where they installed remote intelligence cameras,
right.
They've actually reduced crime homicides, I think they said about 57%. So it's quite astonishing.
Right. Either by really monitoring it or encouraging people to think that it is monitored and be less likely to commit crimes.
And because the technology is so amazing, and what they've computerized and the intelligence that they build into the devices,
right.
That opportunity. So again, it is not the focus of the nonprofit to do that, but if that is a need, the infrastructure will be in place to allow that to occur, and I think that's what's the important piece. You know, the nonprofit isn't looking to be Big Brother,
right?
But if there were an event that required that, the capability exists. It could be marshaled and used for those purposes. And then the board of directors will have to, you know, approve and you know, work with the committee, make the decisions on what are the policies and rules that will be set.
Okay. Why don't we wrap up by invoking the spirit of a person who I guess is in some sense Philadelphia's first citizen, Benjamin Franklin, who was both an inventor, a scientist, and a politician, who was who created the public library and the fire department, and was a publisher. In what ways do you see what you're doing now as following in the footsteps of Benjamin Franklin as a person who used the best technology of his time to spread democracy and to upgrade the quality of life for the people of Philadelphia and the United States and the world?
Well, you know, we have the 300th anniversary of Ben Franklin coming up next year, and we think he would be extremely proud of his city of innovation, continuing that legacy by making Philadelphia the first major city in the country to support this ubiquitous access for everyone, for all, the inclusionary system that this wonderful group of executive committee that came together put forth this business plan that the mayor has highly supported and is backing to allow it to go forward. So we think he'd be thrilled.
Okay.
I think it is an opportunity to set a standard for the rest of the country, and that Philadelphia will reestablish itself as a very innovative community, which it is.
Okay. I want to thank you for talking to us about this today, and we'll check in again going forward to keep up to date, and hopefully maybe we'll have some telepresence at your the grand finishing ceremony next year, and as well as keeping in touch along the way.
Well, thank you very much.
Thanks very much.
It was a pleasure.
Right.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.